Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Jen, who is here to speak with us to help highlight the last practice offering in support of the Bridge Walk for this year. Welcome, Jen.
Hi, Jen. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great, perfectly.
Awesome.
Thanks for being
Yay.
With us.
Yeah, thanks for asking. It's fun to be here.
Yeah. So I think as we mentioned, I think it was even on Good News last week that we mentioned that the whole weekend, this coming weekend, if one wanted to, really could be an entire retreat weekend because we've got an offering on Saturday morning, the practice of commitment. And then on Sunday, we have two offerings back to back. And I actually love the way, to be honest, we didn't even really plan it that way, but it worked out perfectly that there's a yoga offering in the morning, which you are generously offering, and followed by a Best Year Yet workshop in the afternoon, or, you know, depending on one's time zone, it works out to be whatever it works out, one in the afternoon, one in the evening, however that goes. But at any rate, one could turn the whole weekend into a little retreat. And so we thought it would be fun to have you on, both to talk a little bit about the yoga offering that you're offering in what, from the Pacific Coast, starts in the morning, and also because you're quite a veteran of Best Year Yet, and so to speak a little bit about your experience of the benefits of incorporating that into your awareness practice. So maybe we could start with the yoga, speaking a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I was looking at that too. I was wondering, it didn't seem like we had really planned it, but life planned it so beautifully.
Life did,
so
exactly.
Right, it's so perfect. Yeah, so I love that we get to have the yoga kind of in between these beautiful, the Saturday and then the yoga and then the Best Year Yet. It's just so fun. But yeah, so I just would really, you know, encourage people to come and check it out if they're so moved. I just love yoga for so many reasons, but it, you know, every time that I have an opportunity to practice yoga with Sangha, I feel like my experience of the power of the practice and how beautiful the practice is really deepens. So I feel like I still, you know, I'm still like finding words and ways to articulate that. But what we have on offer this weekend is called the joy of caring for the body, because that's one of the things that I see a lot about yoga and exercise in general, is that so often it's like, ugh, caring for my body, you know, that's hard. Like when ego gets a hold of it, you know, or it has to, you know, we have to have pain to have gain, all those weird things that have happened in the culture and all of that. And so to really, my intention is to offer something that's an experience of how lovely and wonderful it potentially can be to take care of our bodies and be in relationship with the breath and life and the body and actually enjoy that, and that there's just enormous benefit for the body, the mind, everything in a practice like that. So, yeah.
Absolutely lovely, lovely. And such a treat to be stewarded through that process instead of be left alone with the voices that are trying to do everything they can to stop me from doing that. Yeah. And
exactly.
So then one could choose to, you know, have that. I keep stumbling over start your day. Well, it just depends on where you are. But at any rate, one could practice with doing the yoga and then moving into the Best Year Yet workshop. And maybe you could say a little bit about what you've seen as the benefit of working with the Best Year Yet process in your own practice.
Yeah, oh my goodness, there's a lot to say there too. But yeah, oh my gosh, it's just so powerful, and I know it might feel like a little bit, you know, cliche or something, but it's so true that sometimes we talk about this, but I really feel like I do indeed have my best year yet every time that I do that process. But it's just so powerful and, yeah, so helpful to take some time to be guided through this process of, you know, like before best year yet, I would do more of that thing of, oh, quick, it's January 1. What do I want to have as a resolution? And I would just kind of pull something out of, you know, goodness knows where, right? And then so it's so different to really step back and reflect on the past year, you know, and with that great support, so it doesn't turn into conditioning, you know, telling me where I didn't measure up or something, but really getting a chance to see, you know, what the human has been up to and what's really worked, and then also to see maybe areas that I want to expand into or that could use some more love and care and focus, and to have a process to do that with intention and support. It's just such a different experience. And then it's so fun to practice with those things through the year because it feels like they come from such a grounded place. So it's the best. And I hope everybody will get a chance to do it, whether you've done it before, then you know the power of it, or certainly if you haven't, to give yourself that opportunity. It's such a beautiful way to reflect on and step into a new year.
You know, and as you're saying all of that, Jen, it really reminds me, again, completely not planned this way, but the way it worked out, again, is so perfect that on the Saturday, the practice of commitment, and I love it that at first I was thinking, oh, shoot, I wish they were flip-flopped, right? You know, because then you get to look at the practice of it. But actually what I realized is that's completely perfect because I think that's actually what happens to most people is that they walk into a goal-setting process believing that the goal is the point and that's the content. And the content is the thing that's going to make me happy. And, of course, it isn't. And, therefore, I'm essentially set up for failure right from the start. But what we see in practice is that it's the process of commitment, right, that's where there's so much joy and so much freedom, and it really, in my experience, releases kind of that enthusiasm for the process of living. And so I actually don't know the content of the practice with commitments. I'm only guessing. I'm signed up for it. I can't wait for it. But it just feels perfect that on Saturday we get to look at, okay, what is that practice of commitments? What is that process that we can work with? And it feels like once we establish that, once we kind of know, all right, yeah, it really isn't the thing isn't the point. It's the process I'm working with around it. Then there's a way in which it opens up a playground on the content. Great. Well, then what do I want to play with? What am I excited about this year? What is catching my attention? What would be fun? What are places I want to stretch? So it feels like then we're invited on Sunday to sort of look more at the whats that are going to go in that process that we're going to practice with.
Exactly. I was seeing that too. And of course, yeah, I have no idea either, although I believe that Ashwini is leading that on Saturday. Yeah, and I'm signed up for that as well and can't wait. And we'll just say, oh my goodness, the last couple of workshops that she's led for the Africa, my experience has been, oh wow, they have been such fabulous, sure, amazing offerings. So wow, you know, cannot wait for Saturday. But yeah, I'm so with you. It feels so helpful to have that first, you know, and then we get into our bodies and out of the head with the yoga,
exactly.
And then there we are, just, you know, really ready for the sweetness of stepping into the best year yet from all of that. So, and I do love, like, life engineered that whole thing so perfectly. Probably if we had all sat down and tried to cook this up, you know, it wouldn't have showed up that way, but life just had this beautiful plan, so yeah.
And, you know, that's the finale, right? That's the finale of this kind of practice-a-thon, of coming together to support the work in Africa. I was just looking at on the website, the number is $84,310. And I happen to, isn't that exciting? And I happen to know that there, because of this weekend coming up and some other things, that there's a number of things that are not entered in there yet. And so we're more around the $90,000 mark at this point. And so it's starting to get real. It's starting to feel like, ooh. So just an encouragement for folks who maybe either haven't participated or, you know, really looking at, gosh, that win-win of getting to support yourself this weekend and with your own practice and also make a donation to take us across that finish line. So, so fun, so good. We're so lucky.
Thank you for offering those numbers, Jen. I was so curious. I was hoping we might hear tonight. So that is so fun. And yeah, it feels like, oh, you know, hopefully that might, you know, bump any of us over the edge if you're on the fence or whatever, you know, that place of like, okay, why not, right? We know it's going to feel great for us to have these practice opportunities. But then you know, who knows what that will do toward the Africa fundraiser. How fun is that? So, yeah, I love that. Woo.
Yeah. Well, Jen, we're at the top of the hour. Thank you so much for being with us. Was there anything else you wanted to add in before we end?
No, just can't wait for this beautiful weekend to practice together in all these great ways. And thank you for the Africa update. So exciting. And huge thanks for all the beautiful work that's going on. Those calls with Teresa, another, oh, my goodness, fabulous, amazing. So, yeah, just so much fun. Thank
you. We are blessed, indeed. Yeah. All right, yeah. Jen. Well, thank you so much for being with us. Take good care.
Thank you.
Okay, good night. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Jen. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
Hey there. I'm excited to hear so many good things about practice in Africa, and it seems almost impossible to separate those two, which is probably the point.
That's a very good way of stating it. When I was listening to the two Jens talk about it, it's just that it's almost an abundance of riches. Right. Usually January is one of those months where we do the kickoff, and that's about all that is that's officially some practice going on. And this year, it's like almost as if we can't keep up. Every weekend, there's something that we can do. And you know, Michael, that might be what it feels like almost. I don't know. Maybe some people feel like it's way too much. And yet, it's that lovely saying, we'll do for the love of others what we wouldn't do for ourselves. And so the fact that it is for that project and for those kids and our offering is something that we love to do practice. And so what, given what we were looking at in the kickoff just day before yesterday, that everything is new, everything is now, everything is never been before, right? And so unless we're indulging a conversation about I'm spending every Saturday doing nothing but practice offerings, then, or I'm just here for the next one, or this one, more to the point.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it is quite amazing, and it's truly an abundance, as you say, and it's really wonderful. And I'm ready for announcement, unless there's something else you'd like to add first.
Please, Michael, go for it.
Okay. First, I have a quick message for our AT&T callers. So AT&T has been having a disagreement with Start Meeting, which is what we do this show on each week. And so we encourage any AT&T callers to use the Start Meeting app on your phone. So if you don't have the app already, you can download an app from Start Meeting and choose the option to dial in using the Internet. So again, there's been a disagreement between AT&T and Start Meeting, how we host this show. And so if you're an AT&T caller, you can download the Start Meeting app and then choose the option for dial-in using the Internet.
And that is right, Michael, in the event that you can't get on the show or you get bumped off the show or something like that if you're calling in directly.
Yes, exactly. Thanks for that clarification. And following up with Jen and Jen, we conclude our January Practice-a-thon to benefit Living Compassion Africa this weekend with three practice offerings, as they mentioned. On Saturday, January 25th, you, Ashwini, will lead a workshop on the practice of commitments. If you are ready to interrupt a pattern of suffering around making, keeping, or not keeping commitments, this workshop is for you. And then recharge and rejuvenate in a gentle yoga practice offering this Sunday, January 26th. The joy of caring for the body practice is a kind, playful, and welcoming opportunity to give yourself some great self-care. And just after rejuvenating, you can join our Best Year Yet workshop to bring conscious awareness to what you want to prioritize this year. This fun and interactive workshop will look at what inspires and excites you as you begin your 2020 adventure of waking up and ending suffering. And if you happen to need clarity around some challenging content in your life, you won't want to miss Sherry's new Socratic email class beginning February 1st. Participants will choose their focus for the class and will have 6 interactions with Sherry. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Ashwini today, you can press *6 and then 1 to make a show and get in the queue. And a conversation of about 5 minutes and focused on one topic would be great. Okay, Ashwini, I think we are ready here.
Okay.
All right. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael and Ashwini. It's Janice from Victoria, Canada.
Hey, Janice.
Hey, I feel like all the excitement of hearing the good news is it's stimulating me because I've signed up for some of these things, and I just wanted to just touch base and say how much I appreciate everything that is offered on year-long practices for year-long retreats. I think this is going to be our kind of fourth one where, you know, we get the actual call-ins Monday to Friday and the daily assignments. I've seen them and done over the years, but the momentum of building this up, I just want to put a plug in. Like, I am so happy to be making a change for good this year, and continuing. And it doesn't even feel like there's been a break because of all of these practice commitments and the New Year's retreat, and it's all flowing together, and the wheel just keeps turning.
Oh, Janice, you're so right, right? I mean, when you say that and you are pointing to the joy of being a part of it, that's really what came through to me, right? That suddenly practice isn't something that we do as an event in our lives. It's how we live and what we participate in that gives us that level of joy, and the participation has its own benefits and rewards. And there's such gratitude for the community and the structures that assist us to have that experience. It's just a lovely cycle somehow.
It really is.
A nonstop revolving cycle of giving and receiving. And I would say that the structures are available and people participate. And without that participation, it wouldn't make a difference. If you weren't there for the New Year's retreat, for all of those practice offerings that you've signed up for, every day on the call on that radio show for the year-long retreat, it wouldn't matter that we had this, right? And so
right. It's
just a marvelous place of energy that there's so many of us who are committed to waking up and ending suffering and committed to doing it together, playing our part in it.
Yes, it's really the doing it together part, because that's the thing that if I'm feeling a little, oh, maybe not today, I'm thinking, oh, those people are showing up, somebody's showing up, mm-hmm. somebody's turning on the button, and whether it's open air or virtual meditation or whatever it is, mm-hmm. the reflective listening buddy waiting, you know, it's just, I will do for the love of others. And mm-hmm. It just seems like even when I hear the numbers about the fundraising, and I have my fundraiser, it just it cranks it up again, like, yeah, so I'm on the home stretch and there's more I can do. There's mm-hmm. more. And yes, I know there's next year too, but that, you know, what can I do now in the next 2 weeks? And it's the enthusiasm of the entire team. And like the call to Teresa, and mm-hmm. I was on the Wednesday call and the Sunday call, and I could just keep hearing her deflecting. It's not me, even though we all want mm-hmm. to thank Teresa. It's everybody on both sides of the different parts of the world, but she really emphasizes it is her team. And mm-hmm. she can't do it on her team, too. And so mm-hmm. we're just like a giant team.
Yeah, we are just like a giant team. It's so hard to find the words to articulate what you're pointing us to, Janice, and so I won't even try, except to say thank you for doing that or attempting to do that, because the place I go to when you say that, I think it's the place that happens when we are all practicing together. Because, you know, you could have a conditioned response to, oh, there's way too many things to do, or I've done my part and I can't do more, or this is another thing that I have to do, or however we are conditioned to be identified with the no to life. But to have that orientation of yes, I'm part of this, and I want to be part of this, and I want to be moved by this, and to participate in it, and to be together with everyone else who's doing the same, there's just a joy and an enthusiasm that releases that's indescribable.
Yes. So the joy and it's indescribable, and especially when, you know, I'm saying yes, I realize there's no deflation from the no. There's no, like, illusion that saying no is going to give me some happiness, or, in quotation marks, a break from it all. Because really saying yes is the thing that it gives its energy to me. Life is there all the time, and I can sort of just be nourished by its energy by saying yes.
Yes. Well, that's such an important point as well, that somehow the no is meant to cut off that life force. And if we continue to say no, we continue to feel the sense of being asked for more than we can give, and a sense of a lack of our adequacy or sufficiency or whatever it is. But if the practice is of saying yes, then we're connected to an infinite source of energy that continues mm-hmm. to give. And what I do by saying yes is to open the aperture to that source of energy so it can keep pouring through me in larger and larger amounts, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than turning the tap off. And when we're in that energy, I think what you said is when conditioning attempts to say no, or attempts to say you don't have the time, or you don't feel like it, or whatever else, it just feels so much easier to not pay attention to it, because it's such an expanded energy place that the attention is on.
Yes, it's such a place of abundance and possibility.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what is going on in this particular life, because I just see it's all change. Anyhow, everything's changing, and change is opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, it doesn't matter what's going on, because we've switched from a content focus to a process focus, in which if we're in life, anything can be going on, and there's energy for all of it simultaneously, right? So you can go to your yoga class, and you can go to the best year yet, and then you can attend to the dishes, and you can take care of whatever that needs to be taken care of, and take a nap if you're feeling tired. It's all possible. There's no this or that, right? We're not in that this or that process because we're limited.
Yeah, and I think that the things that I'm participating are things where I'm actually not doing but I'm being. I'm present mm-hmm. to whatever the workshop is or whatever. And so that in that way, I feel I actually have more time and energy because I'm really just being present.
Oh, what a good point. I don't think I need to say anything more than that, Jen, because I think that is it. That when we're in the state of being and not doing, we just are. And so it doesn't feel like it's tiring or exhausting or depleting in any way. You're just being present. How lovely.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for offering everything and just everybody supporting each other. And I'm just so grateful to be a part of it.
Well, deep gusho, thank you. Thank you, Anna.
Good night.
Good night.
Miss Janice and Ashwini, I was really struck in that conversation by the, it's hard to put into words, but the team aspect, we're all doing our part no matter which continent we're on. I feel like I'm being... Okay, Ashwini, are you there?
I am. Thank you, Michael. I guess that's okay. That's what we were expecting, huh?
Yes. And we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Pasha from San Francisco.
Hey, Pasha. Hey, Pasha.
Hi, Michael. I'm so excited after this weekend kickoff.
Yeah. Pasha, there's a little bit of background noise there.
Yep. I just woke into a less noisy place, but I'm outside in the rain.
Good.
Can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly now.
Very nice. So, yeah, I just want to second that, that I appreciate such a generous offering of being with Sangha together every day. And what a great opportunity and a great theme for this year.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was, wasn't it? Both places, that same thing that Janice said, which is, wonderful to be with Sangha and to be with Sangha on a daily basis. And then the theme of what was being offered. Say a little bit more about what you were seeing about that.
Yeah. Well, even being on the workshop and where was it? Like yesterday, day before yesterday, we went outside and saw this plants and the beautiful sunny day. And it just brings to presence. So much that that everything else, like all conditioned world, disappears. But then I come back, sit on a cushion, and I'm still there. But then I get up off the cushion, and I'm losing that presence. So that transition, from cushion to the activity. Is I find it challenging. I was just here. I was just breathing. I was just in meditation, and now I'm get up and gone.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Yes. Well, I think you're pointing us to a couple of things, right, Pasha? Because the workshop this weekend, the kickoff this weekend was looking at transition and how beginnings and endings are so much about what life is about, and there's a way in which we can be present to life in the moment and have such a feeling of being alive and being part of everything and breathing. Yeah. And we looked at how to do that, and what you're noticing is where the unconsciousness happens, right? That you're sitting on the cushion, breathing and present, and feeling very alive and very here, and that the moment get up is a moment of transition, and how quickly the awareness collapses or the mind wanders or that kind of thing. and where are you? And that's such a beautiful inquiry, because it's the only way you're going to get here. So we notice when we are here, and we notice when we tend to go off, which tends to be in activity transition, as you're pointing at. And then we shift the lens of inquiry there to go, well, what happened? How did that happen?
Yeah.
And bring attention to that.
Yes, I'm very excited to look at those transitions closer. You know, how this unconsciousness happens. You know, how this transition happens. How can I learn to be present in this little transition, you know, just from the cushion into walking out of the room? How can I be present
the
there?
Exactly, the hardest place. Yes, and Sherry often always says that is such a great place to practice. The moment the bell rings, I do gassho to my space and get up, do gassho to the room, and can I be present while I walk out of the hall?
Yes, and everything else in life is in constant transition. How can I be present for the big transitions in life? Like where you know, voices start talking, oh, well, you're changing jobs or you're changing locations, you cannot meditate, you are like, you know, whole conversation starts every transition. They're trying to get me back into, you know, into unconsciousness. So if I can stay with the transition, you know, imagine what can happen.
Yeah, exactly. And that is the what makes us excited, right? Because it's all of those levels. Mm-hmm. It's not that you're coming from the place where, oh, transition is bad, unconsciousness is bad. It's not that. There's such a fascination to see how we're taken away from just being here. And if you can do it in the small, if you can train yourself in the small places, then we can train ourselves in places where being present has so much more impact on our lives. Not that a small transition and a large transition are inherently different in process, but the impact of being able to be present all the time, regardless, gives us such a different experience of being alive. And so if being alive is what it is, that being participating in life in this way is what I want. What I want, then I just have this curiosity about transitions everywhere.
Yes. So very exciting year. Looking forward. Thank you so much. Deep gassho.
Thank you, Pasha. Deep gassho as well. It is going to be an exciting year. It's going to be an exciting moment, right?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for joining us, Pasha. And Ashwini, I have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Jodine in San Francisco.
Hi, Jodine.
Hey, Jodine.
Hi. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
It's been a couple weeks now, but our workshop on the weekend makes me feel like kind of the new year starts then, right?
Yes. It's a new moment every moment.
Yeah. So I'm calling with something that I haven't really hashed out yet, and conditioning says, like, oh, my God, you can't say anything. But here I go. And actually, it maybe kind of folds into the discussion that that there's already been going on. What happened for me recently is I have been dealing with this chronic illness, now Parkinson's disease, for like almost 7 years. And I've come to understand that the illness can go kind of one way, take one path. It's, you know, well understood, and it can take another path that's also pretty well understood. And one of those paths would be conditioning would say way worse. Mm-hmm. In the past few months, I've kind of been becoming aware of some changes in myself, and those changes, I didn't think much about it at first, but then I kind of like had this panic moment and said, does that mean, you know, the illness is going down the way worse path for me? And I haven't, you know, had a chance to talk with a doctor or anything like that. But I saw this kind of, I saw what happened, and it was like conditioning, you know, was a hold of me. I went to the internet. I looked up, like, symptoms, you know, what does that way worse look like? Or how do you know you've got that, quote unquote? And I went down that list and I checked off a number of things, and there were things on there that I knew about already and things that I hadn't heard of that are part of my experience of the illness. And I have to say, I walked around like, I don't know, for like 2 days or something, like someone who'd been handed a death sentence, like for sure, I have this way worse, you know, path going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know, you know, how this happens. Like we're talking about, like, you're sitting on the cushion and your state is, you know, state one, then you get off your cushion and it's state two. I seem to transition into this more centered state. And I looked at that list of symptoms and basically, like, every single one of them that I had checked off, I could attribute it to something else. Like, for instance, one of them can happen as a side effect of one of the medications I take.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it might not mean, you know, it might not mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so after like, I don't know, it's like looking at, you know, it's like looking at the world with these gray glasses on versus, like, taking them off.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Oh, Gideon, I don't know if this is what you're pointing to. I think this is what you're pointing to, but that's exactly where I went when you said it, right? Because, I mean, we say it in many ways, but either we're in the process of presence or we're not, right? If we're not in the process of presence, I'm basically looking to conditioned mind. So there, if you look at from your experience, there's so much around not knowing, right? So from one place, you can look at the same pieces of information and have a completely different experience of life than from another place. So I don't know if I'm being articulate here or not, but there's a process of going to certain knowledge, right? So you have a disease. The disease has two paths. Here are the symptoms for each of the paths. You can do a checklist. If you tick the boxes, then it means that you have this. But but when you look at that, I mean, how do you know? That's what that certain knowledge or that fantasy of authority
is based on statistics. It's based on variability. It's based on averages. It's based on hypothesis. And that's really what the conditioned world is about, right? It purports to state with authority something about life in a way that reduces it to, from all of its marvelous complexity and permutation and variability, into a set of facts that are absolute, that cause us to go to a place of fear because we believe it's absolute, rather than suggesting that it's just a set of probabilities, right? And so when we consult that conditioned place, we are in that conditioned world, which is a narrow, limited set of possibilities with an absolute focus, and it takes us to a place of fear. And then when we go to that place of not knowing, of being open to, well, maybe that is so and maybe it's not, there's a completely different experience of life. And to be able to tell which process I'm in is so valuable.
Yes, exactly. I love the way you stated, you know, here's all these probabilities and there's research behind it and there's numbers to describe, you know, the average person's experience or whatever, but, you know, but I cannot say, nobody can say, and even when I do go talk to my doctor, that this means anything in particular.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It's just, yeah. And well, the opportunity that presents to conditioning is to snatch me, you know, body and soul into, you know, the dark room, basically.
Yes. Yes. Well, and it's exactly right, right? That is what it's meant to do. You consult conditioned mind, you become identified with that separate self that is living the fear of a possible outcome which is believed to be real rather than just a bunch of probabilities. Because when you're here, right, Jordine, the only thing you know is what's here. So perhaps you're feeling good in this moment. And then the next moment, you're not feeling good in this moment. All you know is if you're in this moment, I feel good or I don't feel good. But what the conditioned trajectory is, well, this symptom implies a predictable path of XYZ that means something, and you're going to have to live what it means rather than live what is now. Right?
Right. The person with the death sentence.
That's right. It's already been concluded.
Walking around in the bright sunshine with death, you know.
Yes.
Oh my God. Clouding over everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
wow. It's already a foregone conclusion. And that's my experience because that's the conditioned hypothesis of absolute. And we don't know.
No? Yeah. And the thing is, before that little, you know, voice got me looking on the internet, like there was no difference between that person and the person after she looked at the list, you know, there's nothing changed.
Exactly, except where the attention was, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we keep talking about. I'm consulting that fantasy of authority, and my life is over. It's predictable, it's fixed, it's limited, and it's static. That's not transitions. That's not impermanence. That's not living in the moment. If I don't know how it's going to be, then there's a way in which I can be with how it is and support that human being in every moment.
Right, yes. Because no matter what happens to her, she needs support.
Which is exactly right, you know, and that what dropped in when you said that, right, Jordine, that we live with a diagnosis of a particular orientation to life rather than with what we do know, right? I mean, that diagnosis or that trajectory is an unknown. And yet I choose to, we are so conditioned to go with an illusion of the unknown as known, rather than the known, which is this human being, regardless of what happens to her, needs support, is a conclusion that you can take to the bank. Mixing my metaphors here, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. That's what I want to invest in, is to be able to be there for her no matter what her life is, because I know that her life will be a bunch of undulations, because that's my experience. And so what I want to do is to train to be the person who can be with this human being no matter what the experience is.
Yes, and also for me, to be able to drop out of the undulations, like no matter where I am on the undulation trajectory,
mm-hmm.
To come back to the awareness that undulations happen.
That's right.
And
which is what practice.
It's going to change.
Right?
It's like this is not going to be forever if I feel horrible, and it's also not going to be forever if I feel great. But
that's right.
Yeah.
Well, and because it's one of my favorite things in practice, right? That you go through periods of well-being and depths of despair, and there's always a process that's unfolding. And if you pay attention, you can realize what the structure in the process is and build awareness around it so you know where you are in the process. So, for example, mm-hmm. if I begin training with something, I'm going to have huge enthusiasm in the beginning when I make the commitment, and then I'm going to hit resistance, and then I'm going to hit a plateau, and then I'm either going to quit or it's going to become part of my life. And if it becomes part of my life, I'm going to struggle with doing it with joy, right? I know that no matter what content it is, that structure, I can pluck. And so if I'm in the place of I don't want to do this, and I have built awareness of the pattern of that, then I know I'm just in part of that process. And I can support myself in the part of the process I'm in without thinking mm-hmm. that it's something wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't like it, quote unquote. Yeah.
Or it feels like it's the end of the world.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Great. Wow. Thank you.
Thank you, Jodine. It takes so. Life is such a workshop, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And when we arrive at those places where we can laugh like you just did, right? It is a workshop. Well, why would I ever think that it would be anything different? And I have those moments of pure terror, and I have those moments of awareness. But what I have in all of that is everything you've done as a practitioner to be able to be here.
Yes, right, yeah. Right. The seeing the process.
Yes, and knowing that she needs support and knowing how to give her that support and staying within the environment that supports her just to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care, Jenny.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks for joining us, Jordan. Ashwini, what dropped in for me during that conversation is how conditioning can snatch us and take me off into a suffering place quickly, completely ignoring what is actually going on right now in this moment.
Yeah. I think we were talking about it on
during the kickoff, right? That illusion of continuity, which is living in ego versus being in the moment for what the moment contains.
Yes.
And that the illusion of continuity can be a frightening place to live because it, I mean, especially if you're dealing with something like Jodine was pointing us to, to wander around with a death sentence. You're dead before you have a chance to live out every other moment that's still yours to live.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And Ashwini, we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsor, and then we'll come back to talk with more callers.
Okay.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini. This is Elizabeth.
Hey, Elizabeth. I can't hear Michael, so can you hear me?
I can.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I was muted. I'm sorry.
Okay,
I was
good.
Muted.
All right.
Okay.
Hey, Elizabeth.
Hey.
We're all back on the show.
Yay. Man, that I just gotta say, I'm so grateful I heard that conversation with the caller just before the break, and wow, I'm gonna listen to that 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm. What were you saying about it, Elizabeth?
That I need to listen to it 1,000 times.
No, just what about it that resonated for you, or was there something else that you wanted to share on the call today?
There was something else I needed some guidance and wisdom around, but I really appreciate that last call. I am going to go record it as soon as we're done, as soon as it's posted up on the Open Air Archives. There's a situation I don't know how to practice with. And when I meet people who are Christians and they find out that I don't believe the Bible is the actual exact word of God, then I feel like they act superior. And I don't know, I've asked myself why it's even important, and I've done the two-handed recording about why I get in a suffering place about it. But I don't know, so exactly.
So it's not that you don't know how to practice with it. You are practicing with it. Wouldn't that be fair to say? Because what the practice of it is, you have a situation in which you see yourself suffering. And so then as an awareness practitioner, you're going to the process of what it would take, what awareness can you bring to the situation that assists you not to suffer? So I would suggest that is the practice, right? So if I would take that a step further, wouldn't you say that what's going on right now is just simply that there's a belief around what it means to practice around it or something like that? That is taking you away from your experience? What is the belief here?
The belief is there's something I shouldn't be so triggered by it, and if there's some teaching that will, you know, help me bring more larger perspective or or, you know, why
it
is it when I do
than it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is suffering, right?
Well, that's the, I mean, when I get guidance, then I get a teaching or something to look where I, you know, I can get out of whatever is perpetuating the suffering.
So what did you see when you did the two-handed exercise?
That the person on the right hand was like, it's not fair that it's not fair. It's not fair that they get to act superior and be in the, take the one up, you know, and then I'm in the, like, in the one down. It's just not fair.
And what did the mentor have to say?
Mentor kind of was like, I know this is upsetting, and you know, you you believe it's how you treat people that matters, not what you believe, and just kind of like that.
And so when you listened to what the mentor said, where did you go?
I think I was like, gosh, why does this matter to me so much? Why am I getting, why is it so, you know, this isn't right to be, you know, like, why am I so triggered by this?
And so, Elizabeth, we always are interested in the process that we're in, right? Because that's just an interesting place for us to move past the suffering. So when you, if you recorded about the fact that there's something in you, that there's something that's telling you, why are you so concerned about it? Why should it matter to you? Why do you get triggered around this? Can you hear that there's a voice talking to you about it? Right, asking you those questions?
I guess I was confused that that's kind of the practitioner wondering what is going on.
And could it be that it's someone being talked to and therefore attention is going on a conversation? And when attention is on a conversation, you're not here. And so that is the suffering process. The voice that is telling you that there's something wrong, that you cannot actually not get triggered, or there's something wrong with getting triggered, or something wrong with any of those, whatever it is that's going on for you.
So I could just stay with the crappy feeling of how it feels when someone is superior, acting superior.
Well, yes, that's one possibility, of course. I mean, there's so many things you can do when that happens, right? But the point being that, the point to recognize here being that as a practitioner of awareness, you're paying attention. You're practicing presence. And what's interrupting your practice of presence is a conversation that's telling you that there's something wrong with the way you feel, as a result of which, because you're giving attention to it, you're believing something that a voice in your head is telling you, and you're feeling upset. Not just when the person is being superior, but right now, you're being talked to by a voice that is causing you to believe that there's something wrong. And so part of what we're always doing is redirecting attention from the voice, not believing it, not solving the problem that the voice is telling you you have. Because as soon as you listen to that voice, where do you go? Well, I believe that there's something wrong. I believe that I shouldn't have this reaction. I believe I shouldn't get triggered. And so the voice, the conditioned mind, the voices have your attention and are feeding on your attention. That's the process we want to see and see through, right?
Well, the other process I'm not sure about is this just ego? Is this just my ego getting me riled up that they're getting the superior one down, one up position? So,
are you suffering, Elizabeth?
I've been pretty upset about it.
Well, then I would say yes.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's what I'm pointing you to, right? When we are, when we're believing what the conversation is telling us, we're not here for how it is. And so there's a way in which paying attention to any conversation is what causes us to suffer. And if I'm suffering, I can be pretty sure that I'm believing what the conversation is saying, and I'm identified with someone and having a reaction to it.
Hmm.
So sometimes it's not about solving the problem as opposed to exiting the conversation that said there is one.
Okay, then with that guidance, I will just say, okay, we're feeling crappy, and we'll just watch feeling crappy.
Exactly.
Or something like that.
Possibility. Or you can say, whenever I meet someone who is acting superior, I'm just going to say, okay, you get to be superior. I'm not going to react. I could practice that way. Or I could get into a real conversation with them about why they think that that's the case and get really interested in them. Or I could reflect what they say. Or, I mean, there's so many ways in which I can have mastery over the situation in terms of the interaction, all of which are a lot more fun than listening to a conversation in the head that makes me miserable, that it's unfair that someone gets to be superior. You can enjoy their superiority. You can agree with their superiority. You can practice in so many ways with that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not suffering over it, right?
Yeah. Okay, I'm not sure I'm following you 100%, but I can go back and listen to this because the previous call blew me away. So,
got it. And I know you, Elizabeth, so I know you'll do that. So you're going to listen to this conversation, and I think, because it's really hard when we're in our process to see our process, right?
Exactly.
That's right. Exactly so.
It is. Okay, so I'll just go listen to this a bunch.
Excellent. And I bet we'll talk about it again.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Michael.
Take care. Bye, Elizabeth.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth. And Ashwini, I think we have time for one more caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Cara.
Hey, Cara.
Cara?
Can you hear me?
You're breaking up a little bit, so I think I heard your name was Cara.
Yes, is this better now?
I don't know, Michael. She's strobing for me.
A little bit strobing. Maybe you could say a few sentences, Cara, in a row.
Is this better?
Much better.
Yes.
Okay, good. Hi. I was also blown away by the caller. I think it was Jodine. So if
mm-hmm.
she's still listening, thank you.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I was actually calling to ask a quick question, but then a bunch of things came up. So my question was, for people who missed the kickoff on Sunday, are there recordings available, or is that over?
I think there might be, Cara. If you would write to information@livingcompassion.org, we'll see what we can do.
Okay. Okay, livingcompassion.org.
Yeah, information@livingcompassion.org.
Okay. Livingcompassion.org. Okay. Can I ask another question? Is there time or?
Go ahead.
Okay. Is In terms of decision, I noticed in terms of decisions, if someone is sort of, if a fear of reliving something from the past is sort of hindering someone from making a decision right now, how to sort of go about that?
Is that someone you or someone?
That is someone.
You?
No, that someone is me. That someone is me.
So there's someone in your life whom you know who is being hindered in making a decision because of something that happened to them in the past.
That person is me, I'm saying.
Oh, right. Okay, got it. Just trying to be clear. We've got so many people, you know. Okay, someone inside you is, got it. Keep going. I'm on the same page.
No, so if a fear that something that happened before will happen again is sort of hindering one from making a decision right now, how to sort of not be paralyzed by that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, Karen, have you, since we have such a short time left to go through this, rather than processing that, I'm going to ask you, are you familiar with the recording and listening practice?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's just something that I'm stuck on that one. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So have you done a two-handed on that?
Yeah.
And you're still stuck?
Yes.
Okay. Well, here's just a place to look, and then maybe you can call back in and we can have this conversation again, right?
Sure.
Because so part of what I was talking to Elizabeth about, and we touched on in that call with Jodine, is how much the attention is on the conditioned belief, right? So this person needs to make a decision. This person is stuck. The reason the person is stuck is because they had something happen to them that's keeping them in a place of fear. There's a story here, and it's referencing the story and believing the story to be true that is causing the experience that you're having.
Yeah.
Right? It's a construct of beliefs. Because if you were here, whatever is in front of you is what is in front of you. But if we're looking at in that conversation with Jodine, right, the construct of, well, she has something happened to her. It was an awful something that happened to her. It should never happen to her again. And she's afraid that it's going to happen to her. And therefore, she can't make a decision because she's afraid that it's going to happen to her.
That
is what we're referencing, right? Which makes it true that she cannot make a decision and is maintaining the lie that she cannot make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you stepped out of the story and you talk to the coin and say, I just want to make a decision and I'm going to go with whatever decision the coin tells me to make, you would be out of the story. Which is what we practice when we are trying to resolve dualities, right? Should I stay? Should I go? Do I do this? Do I not do this?
Yeah.
The belief that is being perpetuated is that there's a right decision to make. This particular decision will give me the experience that I want. That somehow or the other, if I make the right decision, I can avoid all the pain in my life.
Right. If I make the right decision, then this thing that happened before won't happen.
Won't happen again. Yeah. It's all the construct and conditioned mind, because you have no idea what's going to happen, as you talked about with Jodine. You have no idea whether it will be painful or not painful. You have no control over that. Whether or not you make a decision, you still don't know what's going to happen, right?
Right.
What's happening is happening now, and that's the only thing that you can be present to. And the only thing that you can reassure her with is what this practice offers, which is no matter what happens, I'll be here for you. I'll be by your side. I love you. And that's probably what she didn't have when that whatever it was that was horrible happened to her. And that's been you uses by the conditioned story to control her moment-to-moment life experience now.
Yeah.
And making her miserable.
Huh. Okay.
So when you do the two-handed, what you're doing is trying to assist the person who's being talked to about being afraid of this decision and finding out what would support her and how she could be facilitated through this process. But really, the actual decision, you could truly flip a coin and go, if this is a workshop, it's going to go this way, and I'm going to be with what it is, and it's going to be this way, and I'm going to support her in whatever it is. Because in life, if you listen to the recording from our kickoff, we don't know. All I ever know is the information I have in this moment. And this moment will go, and the next moment will arise. If there's life, there's also death. That's what every moment is. And what I learned to be is present to how life is, not how life isn't, which is something static that can be controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And avoid it, and plan for, and manage. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, call back in, Karan. Maybe we could continue this conversation because that was a lot to take in, and it's a direction to start exploration, right?
Yeah. I will listen to this again. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. Thanks, Kara.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Kara, and thank you for facilitating us tonight, Ashwini. It's great to have you here. And a real pleasure to connect with Sangha and all our callers and all of our listeners.
It was indeed. Thank you again for being here, Michael. Take care, everybody.
Thank
Go
you.
Happy.
Take care. Go happy.